Who was Gideon chasing as he crossed the Jordan over to the, what country was he chasing? The who's? The Midianites. Yeah. So as he goes by a couple of towns, Succoth and Bethuel, he asks for food, but they don't give him anything because they're kind of afraid because the two kings of the Midianites are still out on the run. He says, I'll be back. And as he, after he took care of the Midianites down at Kekor, then he does go back. Tears down the tower at Thebes. No, at Penuel. Tears down the tower. Slew the men of the city. Went back to Succoth. And how he caught them with thorns and briars, we don't know. But I'm glad I wasn't there. But he took care of the men of Succoth. Okay. Gideon, though, people wanted to make him ruler. And what was his response? He said, who is? Neither me nor my sons. But he said, who is the ruler? Jehovah. The Lord is your ruler. And so, that's the way it was for probably close to 40 years. But then he had one ambitious and unscrupulous son by a concubine by the name of Abimelech, who had different thoughts. So he went to the men of the city of Shechem, the city where his mother lived, and got them to agree to support him. As the ruler, they give him some money. He goes back to Ophrah, kills the 70 brothers, except one, Jotham. And then for the next 2 or 3 years, he just kind of runs roughshod over that area of the country. Eventually, the men of Shechem rebel. He wipes them out. Then he's about to wipe out the city of Thebes. People are in a tower. Some woman there throws a millstone on his head, almost kills him. And then he has his armor bearer go ahead and finish off the job. So those were 3 rough years, so to speak, in that particular part of the land of Israel. Today, though, we're going to be looking at 3 more judges. And by the way, back up and make sure we understand this. Freddie made the point. Abimelech was not called by God. He's listed among the judges, but completely different from any other judge that we're studying. Okay. Any comments about that? Okay, Ren. Yeah. Right. Okay. So it didn't go away, did it? Okay. Even years later. This is that fact that the woman threw the millstone on Abimelech's head is mentioned during the reign of David. Okay. Tola, Jair, and Jephthah. The first two of these, there's really little said about them. Other than who they were, where they lived, and maybe how long they ruled. So Tola, all we know about him is what we have on the screen. He was a son of Pua. He was from Issachar. I assume that means he was born there. Maybe he's descended from that tribe. But he's actually living down in the hill country of Ephraim. And we looked at, he judged for 23 years. And that's about all we know. But again, there's Issachar is up right by the Sea of Galilee, but he was living down in the hill country of Ephraim. Why? We don't know. But he's the only judge listed as being from Issachar. And there's really not much else in the history that we've studied, I think I mentioned this before, about the tribe of Issachar. But it was located in a very fertile area. There was a ford that crossed the Jordan right south of the Sea of Galilee. And probably a lot of armies, travel vans and so forth, caravans came through that part of the country. But we know very little other than what is revealed there. Okay, the next judge is Jair, and he's from Gilead, the first judge we see from the east side of the Jordan River. And it says he judged for 22 years, and he must have been somewhat of a wealthy man, because instead of us having 30 sons and giving them all a Cadillac to drive around, he had 30 sons, but he had to give them a donkey. And they controlled 30 cities. Now, they were over on the east side, as I indicated, in this area. And they're just called Havoth-Jair, which simply means cities or settlements belonging to Jair. Now, as I say, we haven't said a whole lot about the things on the east side of Jordan for quite a while, but as we go forward, we'll see quite a few things happening over there. Ramoth-Gilead is in that area, one of the cities of refuge. Of course, we will find the men from Jabesh-Gilead later on, having a part in the death of really taking the bodies of Saul and his sons down after they were killed. Okay. Now, we're going to see, these two judges, if they served in consecutive order, covered about 45 years. But again, we're going to see the same thing happening as we've seen before. Israel doing evil in the sight of the Lord. I want you to just notice the list of the gods that they were serving or began to serve. Gods from within, Baal, Asherah, cities from, or gods from the northern sector of the country, Syria, Sidon, Moab is kind of to the south and east, Ammonites to the east, and the Philistines over to the west. Maybe let me flip over here and just see. Here's Syria up here, Sidon, the Amorites, the Moabites, the Philistines. They were surrounded. They were following gods from everywhere imaginable. Kind of sounded like the United States of America, doesn't it? Pretty much what we're doing in our country today. So, is there any reason why God would be upset? They're serving every god except the real God, the God Jehovah. So, as a result, we see the same thing happen. God's going to give them over. This time, the oppressors will be the Ammonites, the ones to the east, and the Philistines over on the Mediterranean. Now, the story that we're going to cover today centers on the conflict or the oppression of the Ammonites. And that oppression is going to last for about 18 years before God sends a deliverer. But as you would imagine, they would begin oppressing Israel over in Gilead. And that's what I was showing. They were to the east. Gilead is along the, over on across the Jordan. And so they will be coming in from that particular side. But it says they are also coming, and I wish I had that map back up there. Okay. So they're going to be, these are the Ammonites. They're going to be oppressing the people of Gilead, which basically runs along this area here. But they're also going to be crossing over into the area here just north of the Benjamin, down into Judah, into Ephraim. But most of what we're going to be talking about is happening over on this side of Jordan. While I got the map, we're going to talk about Jephthah and the land of T-O-B, Tob, or Tob, however you way you want to pronounce it. And I'm not sure exactly where it's at. The map lists it there. I saw something said it's east of Ramoth-Gilead. I saw something that said to the northeast up in Syria. But at least it's a little bit to the north and east of where the people of Jephthah or his family had lived. Now, as these people began to serve the other gods, they come to God and ask for his help again. And I'm going to suggest they confess two things. First of all, it's bad enough just to quit serving Jehovah. But it said they quit serving Jehovah. But then, to add to that, they began to serve other gods. So, whether that's two separate things or not, but at least they forsook God and began to serve Balaam and other gods. So, when they come to God, he's not all that anxious, it doesn't seem like, at this particular time to deliver them. Because he tells them, he said, just think about what I have done for you. I've delivered you from the Egyptians, from the Amorites, the Ammonites, the Philistines, the Sidonians, the Amalekites, and the Midianites. But look what you've done. You've forsaken me over and over again. So I'm not going to deliver you anymore. That was his bottom line at that particular point. But Israel comes back and confess their sin and ask God to be their deliverer again. They put away their gods. And of course, we see God and his mercy sending them another deliverer. Now, we see that at this particular time, the location of the two forces, the Ammonites were encamped in Gilead. We don't know the exact location of that, but we do know that the Israelites are at Mizpah, and that's this down in the central part of the state, of the country. Now, the text kind of skips around a little bit, and it kind of gives us a little history before we actually get into the battle and so forth. We will have a little background as to who Jephthah is and so forth. So, we find out that he is the son of Gilead by a harlot. There are a lot of other brothers and so forth by his father and his wife. But these brothers come and say, hey, you're not one of us. You're not going to have any inheritance in my father's affairs and so forth. So as a result of that, we find him going into the land of, whether it be here or up there, somewhere in the general area though. And there he's going to live for quite a while. And somewhat like Abimelech, he's going to have some worthless men around him, and they follow him on raids and so forth throughout that country. But as the Ammonites begin to bear down on the children of Israel and continue their oppression, we're going to find them in real distress, calling for help. What do we do when we're in distress? We may not have been praying, but when times get rough, what do, James? We pray. We call on God. Okay. So these people, they're going to call and say, hey, Jephthah, how about coming back and helping us? Well, you can imagine he's not really excited about that right off the bat, because he's got a few things to say to him. He said, well, didn't you hate me? Didn't you expel me out of my father's country or out of his house? So why are you coming to me in this time of distress? And so they began negotiating. They say, well, if you'll come back, we'll make you a real ruler over us and so forth. And he said, are you kidding? If I come home, will you really make me one? It's kind of, you can almost see the sarcasm in his voice. Are you really serious about this? And they say, yes, we are serious. In fact, they give their promise before God. And so Jephthah goes back to Mizpah with them, and he also essentially takes a vow that he will do exactly what they have asked him to do. So the battle is about to begin, but Jephthah, he doesn't know what's going on, really. So he sends messengers over to the king of the Ammonites and essentially ask him, you know, why are you upset? What's going on? Why are you about to go to war with me? Of course, the king of the Ammonites, he said, well, because Israel took my land when they came up out of Egypt. We're going to find out how long has that been. He'll tell us pretty soon. About 300 years. I guess we would say, why are you bringing it up now? And that's essentially what Jephthah said. We're not ever going to do that, are we? We're not ever going to bring up anything that happened 50 years ago, you know, maybe. Surely not. Not if it's something that happened bad toward us by one of our brothers or sisters. We just can't do that. But, so, he said, you've taken my land. And he's talking about the land from quite a bit of land. Come on, what happened to my maps? Well, I guess we'll do without that, won't we? Can you get it back in there? But anyway, he has that whole strip of land really that we're talking about. He's wanting to regain that. But when the messenger, Fred, go ahead. Okay, we're back. Okay, so he's talking about this whole strip of land right in here from the Arnon up to the Yarmouk River. So So he's not talking about just a little plot of ground, 2 or 3 acres. He's talking about a territory. So Jephthah, though, goes back and reviews the history of what really took place. It wasn't that Israel took that land, is the bottom line. It was land that God gave them. Because you remember when they came up on the east side of Jordan, where God drove out Sihon, all of those kings, Og, on the east side of Jordan, as the children of Israel came up. So he said, actually God's the one that does this. And he said, now think about it. If your God, Chemosh, had driven out somebody off of land, would you not possess it? This argument makes a lot of sense if you want to be rational about it. So he says, therefore, because the Lord has driven them off the land, we're going to possess it. And he goes ahead and continues his offer. And he says, and no one has tried to claim it for the last 300 years. So why are you trying to do that at this particular time? And he says, I haven't sinned against you. We haven't sinned against your people. So you're wrong in going to war against us. So therefore, I can't say, I think that's right. Brady was talking about that Sihon had actually taken that land from the Ammonites. And then God overthrew Sihon and gave that entire land to Israel. Okay? All right? Thank you, Brady. But, so he says, as a result of that, we're just going to give the land, and we're going to keep the land that God has given to us. Now, the king of the Ammonites, he's not persuaded by all of this logic. And so he goes ahead and prepares for battle. But as we see the battle about to begin, we're going to see Jephthah taking a vow. If you look over in Judges chapter 11, about verses 30 and 31, we're going to find Jephthah vowing a vow to the Lord and saying, if thou shalt without fail deliver the children of Ammon into mine hands, then it shall be that whatsoever cometh forth of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the children of Ammon shall surely be the Lord's, and I will offer it up for a burnt offering. James? James is going back and giving us a little more history. Yeah, as the children of Israel came up the east side, they asked several countries, Edom, Moab, and Ammon, to pass through their land. And all of them refused. So that's another reason why God took that land and gave it to the people. Okay? Somebody did a good job teaching, Fred. Yeah, Mike and Tim did a good job. Okay. But we see him making this vow. And of course, what is the, law, when thou vowest a vow, defer not to pay it. So he's binding himself to do a particular thing if God will bring about a deliverance. These people who have been oppressing his brethren for about 18 years. So, we see him going out to battle in the last verses 32 or so, 33, going out to battle, and he is utterly going to destroy the Ammonites. Again, from the Arnon River, which is just up from about the northern part of in this area here, all the way up to there. So he's going to drive them out of the country and basically just return or keep the land that God has given his people. Now, somebody's going to have to fill in about 5 or 10 minutes. I covered all this material too quick. Now, Freddie, Wednesday night, we'll go ahead and finish the story, though, Jephthah. What happens as he returns from the battle? And also, we're going to see, and I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, we're going to see these people from the tribe of Ephraim. They're going to get all stirred up again because they didn't get called in the battle. But Gideon's not, he's not the ruler this time. Remember, he settled that issue when he was fighting against the Midianites. And they complained about not getting called into the thing until the last minute. You know, he told them to go out and guard the fords of the Jordan River and so forth. And so he resolves that issue by pointing out, look at what you've done. You know, you've done something great, something we were not even able to do. You've captured two of the Midianite princes. And all we've done is just kind of stand around and blow trumpets and break pitchers and hold up and so forth and let them kill each other. Right. Right. If Freddie pointed out what Gideon asked the people for at the end of that battle, spread out this sheet and throw all those earrings that you took off of these people. About 120,000 of them had been killed. And so now, apparently, those Ephraimites, they were a little bit upset because they didn't get in on the battle. And this sounds like might be what's happening Wednesday night. But again, Gideon's not the ruler this time. And so these people may not come out smelling like a rose like they did before. And we've gone through the material rather quickly this morning. I'll welcome any questions or comments you have on these, but these are the 7th, 8th, and 9th judges that out of the 15 that we'll be looking at. So.
Thank you.
That's kind of what I was talking about. Sometimes we don't forget about some of the things maybe that happened in the past, and we even let things like that hold us back from doing what we ought to do. But here he was, you know, initially he was saying, well, you know, why are you calling on me? But as Randall pointed out, he saw that there was a need, and he had the ability and the willingness to go back and, with God's help, deliver his people. So we ought to have the same attitude. We ought to use whatever abilities we have and not let some preconceived notion as to how maybe someone felt toward us or whatever. But we just need to use whatever talent we have and go do that. Ready, did you have something? No, these people actually asked him to come back, but we see it was with God's help, as opposed to what happened in the 3 years that Abimelech, quote, ruled under his own power. But there is some similarity, like Freddie says, between Jephthah and Abimelech in their early years, in that they had these vain men gathered around them. But Jephthah turned out to be quite a different person after he agreed to come back and help deliver the children of Israel. Other comments? Scott, go ahead. Okay. Yes, Scott says Jephthah is at least listed in Hebrews chapter 11 as one of the great peoples of the past history and so forth. Okay. That's definitely a difference then, Scott. That's definitely a difference between Jephthah and Abimelech. You don't see Abimelech listed in Hebrews chapter 11, do you? Men of faith. No, you don't. Okay. Other comments? Okay. James, I'm going to have to get closer to you than that. Yeah. Okay. Because God is king. Yeah, James pointed out that the men who followed Abimelech, they actually called him their king. And having a king other than Jehovah is absolutely out of the question, or against God. All right. I'm glad I ran through this thing in a hurry. We got some good comments. Anybody else? Feel free to speak up. As I said before, you may have to do this to get my attention, but feel free to do that. And Randall's talking about what we're going to be talking about Wednesday night. The fact that whatever the outcome of this vow that Jephthah made, his daughter was willing to follow what her father had said, and whatever that might entail. And Freddie will elaborate on that in great detail Wednesday night, I'm sure. But respecting her father. And that's a lesson that we all need to understand. Even I still respect my father, even though he's been dead since 1957. I still respect him and what he was. So that's something we need to remember. Okay. We're going to call it a day. It's great to be here Wednesday night, Lord willing. Thank you for your comments.